Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just
speaking into the void?
Well, with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills. Wait, did I say job title yet? Get started today and see how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
Worried about what ingredients are hiding in your groceries? Let us take the guesswork out. We're Thrive Market, the online grocery store with the highest quality standards in the industry. We restrict 1,000 plus ingredients, so you can trust that you'll only find the best high quality, organic, and sustainable brands, all free of the junk. With savings up to 30% off and fast carbon neutral shipping, you get top trusted groceries at your door, and you can stop worrying about what your kids get their hands on. Start shopping at thrivemarket.com/podcast for 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Hey, TED Talks Daily listeners, I'm Elise Hugh. Today we have an episode of another podcast from the TED Audio Collective, handpicked by us for you. Sex and sexual health is important for everyone, and yet there's still immense stigma around these topics. This week, we're bringing you an episode from TED Health, where we hear from gynecologist and sexual medicine specialist Maria Sophocles. Maria is on a mission to destigmatize sex conversations, especially among older individuals, because sex should be pleasurable and comfortable for everyone, no matter your life stage. After the talk, listen in on host Shoshana Ungerleiter's conversation with OBGYN and women's health advocate Dr. Jessica Shepherd. If you like TED Talks Daily and want to hear more TED content from a health perspective, look no further than TED Health. You can check out TED Health wherever you get your podcasts and learn more about the TED Audio Collective at audiocollective.ted.com.
Hey listeners, it's TED Health and I'm Dr. Shoshana Ungerleiter. It's estimated that by the year 2025, over 1 billion people will experience menopause globally. This is far from a rare event, yet it remains a topic often spoken about in hushed tones. Why does this vast subject still lurk in the shadows of public discourse? For many, menopause is vaguely understood as an unspecified period or hot flashes and brain fog. But there are plenty of challenges that remain under-discussed in public. In this talk, Dr. Maria E. Sophocles brings a refreshing, bold voice to the menopause conversation. Using humor and a wealth of knowledge, Dr. Sophocles peels back layers of misunderstanding and stigma to bring the hidden struggles of menopause into the spotlight and challenge the status quo. Tune in and then stick around after the talk for my conversation with OBGYN and women's health advocate, Dr. Jessica Shepherd.
Support for the show comes from LinkedIn. One of the hardest parts about B2B marketing is reaching the right audience. I have so often gotten served ads that clearly haven't been intended for me. So if you want to reach the right professionals in your B2B marketing, use LinkedIn ads. LinkedIn has grown to a network of more than 1 billion professionals. That's where it stands apart. And then you can target your buyers by all sorts of different categories: job title, industry, company, seniority, company revenue, so that you can stop wasting your budget on the wrong audience and start targeting the right professionals. LinkedIn will even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign so you can try it yourself. Just go to linkedin.com/TED Audio. That's linkedin.com/TED Audio. Terms and conditions apply, only on LinkedIn ads. Support for the show comes from Mint Mobile. I don't know about you, but I like keeping my money where I can see it. Unfortunately, traditional big wireless carriers seem to like keeping my money too. After years of overpaying for wireless, I finally got fed up and switched to Mint Mobile. It was a great option for us because my daughter recently got her first phone and we weren't really loving the high prices and pointless perks offered by the big wireless carriers. Thankfully, Mint Mobile rescued us, offering premium wireless plans for her starting at just $15 a month. They're here to rescue you too. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month, like my family did. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/talks. That's mintmobile.com/talks. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available, taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
So the other day, a woman walked into my office and exclaimed, "My vagina has betrayed me." Not what most of us hear on a Monday morning before coffee, but welcome to my world as a gynecologist and sexual medicine specialist. You know, everybody thinks of menopause as hot flashes, but for over half of menopausal women, it's accompanied by sexual issues, things like loss of libido or painful intercourse, even total destruction of a relationship. So what I call the bedroom gap. The difference in sexual expectations and capabilities of men and women in midlife. Now, the bedroom gap is a combination of the genital effects of menopause and deeply entrenched cultural and historical gender roles. To understand how to close the bedroom gap and to get the sex we want, we have to examine its root causes. So let's start with some science. In menopause, the ovaries make estrogen less consistently and eventually stop making it altogether. And this loss of estrogen has two huge effects in the vagina. The first is on collagen. Less estrogen means less collagen is made. And the quality of that collagen deteriorates from strong and stretchy to brittle. Ouch. The second effect of the loss of estrogen in the vagina is on blood vessels. We need blood vessels for lubrication. When I'm examining a patient, I can literally see, if she's deficient in estrogen, the deterioration from thick, ridgy, dark pink, elastic, moist tissue to thin, dry, inelastic, pale pink, even yellowish white tissue. We also need blood vessels for arousal. This is where you're supposed to wake up. Now I'm excited. When we're aroused, fluid moves from the blood vessels through the vaginal wall to make lubrication. Without blood vessels, you're not going to get wet no matter how turned on you are. So where does this leave you? Well, you feel dried up. You can't get wet. Your vagina seems to be on fire. And your partner perceives your discomfort. Then you feel bad. Then your partner feels guilty. And then you feel as if you have wrecked the whole moment. I will never forget a patient said to me once, "Dr. Sophocles, when my partner and I have sex, we sing this Johnny Cash song, Ring of Fire. We sing it, I sing it, because I have to sing and laugh, or else I would cry and it would spoil the moment for him. For him. So, While women are living in this ring of fire mercy sex world, on the other side of the mattress, things are a little different. See, for 25 years, men have had a relatively safe, reliable, available medical option for erectile dysfunction. What was first invented to firm up a floppy penis has now become a global phenomenon to optimize male sexual performance. Now, Viagra did not cause the bedroom gap, but I believe it has widened it. And by the way, it's not men's fault. They are just availing themselves of what gender bias modern medicine has on offer. True. But while middle-aged men are benefiting from a rock-hard, medically enhanced erection, their female partners are literally left hung out to dry. So, here's the good news. Women do have options, but they just don't seem to avail themselves of them. Why? What's the holdup? Well, one problem may be that many doctors don't feel comfortable talking to female patients about menopause and sexual issues because they feel they were never properly trained. And I think this is true. Our medical system is woefully outdated. In fact, one study showed that 2/3 of medical training programs in the U.S. have just one lecture on menopause. One. Which may explain why doctors are uncomfortable and why 75% of women who go to doctors to seek care for menopausal problems come away empty-handed. This has to change because every one of us is going to go through menopause and experience the loss of estrogen. And there are a lot of us right now. Globally, there are 1.1 billion women right now who've reached menopause and postmenopause. And almost half of them are suffering from sexual issues largely quietly, and it's probably underreported. I know because for 28 years, I have listened to your stories on 5 continents, and I can tell you that the bedroom gap cuts across race, ethnicity, economics, education, and geography. It is universal and ubiquitous. It's also lasting a lot longer. See, women are outliving men by 5 to 6 years, and they're spending more than a third of their lives after menopause. So there are more postmenopausal women who are single, widowed, divorced. Some of them want to be intimate. They go online. They swipe left. They swipe right. They start dating. They start having sex. And this is great. But between the issues inherent in the bedroom gap, Viagra widening that gap, and the complexities of online dating, it's no wonder you feel your vagina has betrayed you. But it's not your vagina's fault, no. What has betrayed you is not only the biology of aging, but history and culture and gender roles etched in sexual stone over millennia. Sexual dogma that decrees that a woman's role in the bedroom is to please, to serve, to not impede the sexual pleasure that a man is entitled to. Now, we're not going to change a millennia of sexual scripting in a TED talk, but I can offer you this. Since we know that deficiency of estrogen makes the vagina dry and unpleasant, then maybe one solution to closing the bedroom gap might be to replace that vaginal estrogen. Uh-oh. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, estrogen? What about the cancer risk? Well, I get it. we have to address this collective fear of estrogen and cancer. That fear stems from the Women's Health Initiative, the media storm that surrounded the release of that data 20 years ago. That study examined the risks of oral estrogen and cancer, among other things, not vaginal estrogen. So here's the key point. Estrogen behaves differently depending on where and how it's used. Check it out. Vaginal estrogen works genitally, locally, and has positive effects. Systemic estrogen can have positive or potentially negative effects depending on the target tissue. Vaginal estrogen has been out since 1946 and studied extensively and has never been shown to cause breast or other cancer. But we, the big we, have made vaginal and systemic estrogen falsely equivalent. We have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. Our fear does not discriminate. And now far too many women don't use estrogen at all. So where does this leave us? Well, the thing is, we have a right to comfortable sex and a right to pleasurable sex. We talked about vaginal and systemic estrogen, and there are even other medications we can use, vaginal and oral, that will help us to close our bedroom gap. The other avenue to close the bedroom gap is advocacy. How can you close your bedroom gap so that you can enjoy sex, or better yet, how can you never have one happen in the first place? I'm talking to you, millennials and Gen Zers. Well, one, get educated, read credible sources, find clinicians invested in sexual health. Two, talk about it to each other, to your clinicians, to your partners. Talk without shame or blame and get specific. What hurts? What feels good? Get sexually creative and don't do anything that doesn't feel good. And number three, reframe sexual and genital health as a lifelong maintenance project. And don't think that just because you can't get wet or you have wimpy orgasms, that can't be fixed. Because here's the deal, which you already heard in this talk. We have a right to comfortable sex and a right to pleasurable sex. So let's move the sexual equality needle forward. Let's start with young people, young men and women. It is time for sex ed to progress beyond getting a condom on a banana. It is time for sex ed to prioritize equal sexual pleasure for men and women so they learn it right from the beginning when they're starting to have sex. And it is time to revamp medical education to keep up with the demographic explosion of menopausal women so that doctors have the tools and the information they need to provide to women so they don't leave empty-handed. And it is far past time for the concept of sexual pleasure to be gender neutral, because it's never too early to start. It's never too late to improve equal sexual pleasure for men and women. And let's face it, sexual health is part of long-term human health. We know that staying sexually active reduces blood pressure, improves cardiovascular health, decreases stress and depression and anxiety, and is linked to longevity. And we, women, we must emancipate ourselves from the rigid roles of sex for procreation or male pleasure. My big hope is that in closing the bedroom gap, we take one small sexual step towards gender equality for all of us. Thank you.
Support for this podcast comes from Odoo. Imagine relying on a dozen different software programs to run your business, none of which are connected, and each one more expensive and more complicated than the last. It can be pretty stressful. Now imagine Odoo. Odoo has all the programs you'll ever need, and they're all connected on one platform. Doesn't Odoo sound amazing? Let Odoo harmonize your business with simple, efficient software that can handle everything for a fraction of the price. Sign up today at odoo.com. That's O-D-O-O.com.
Hey, you know what would make your customer service help desk way better? Dumping it and then switching to Intercom. But you're not quite ready to make that change. We get it. That's why Finn, the world's leading AI customer service agent, is now available on every help desk. Finn can instantly resolve up to 80% of your tickets, which makes your customers happier and gets you off the customer service rep hiring treadmill. Finn by Intercom, the leading customer service AI agent, now available on every help desk.
That was Dr. Maria Sophocles at TED Women 2023. And now I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Dr. Jessica Shepherd. She's a board-certified OBGYN and a menopause expert. She's the founder of The Modern Menopause and the CEO of Sanctum Med and Wellness in Dallas, Texas. Before we jump in, a quick heads up that the audio quality in this interview isn't how we usually record, but I think this topic is so important, so I really want to still share it with you, and I hope you find it as valuable as I did. Jessica, it was fantastic seeing you on stage at South by Southwest earlier this year, diving into all things menopause and women's health, a truly hot topic, it seems.
That's, no pun intended, right?
That's so true. That's finally getting the spotlight it deserves. It's considering about half of the global population is female. Billions will experience menopause, with many of them having significant symptoms that'll drastically affect their quality of life. There's some progress happening in this space. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've brought up a beautiful point of you're glad that we're here, but I also want to highlight that we're here at the almost like dawn of understanding menopause when we look at it from a perspective of even society, bringing it up as not a taboo topic. We're really just at the beginning stages of how we can really utilize this particular topic of hormones, being comfortable with talking about menopause, and now going out to educate not only physicians who, you know, we were basing this on research, but also the vast majority of the population, as you said, which is mostly women. So there's a lot of education to be done, a lot of kind of myths to debunk, and that takes time.
So just over 20 years ago, results from this very large trial called the Women's Health Initiative, or WHI, were released. Tell us about the results of that trial and how it influenced the prescribing of hormone therapy for menopause symptoms by doctors in America.
Yeah, you know, going back to why that study was even launched, it was supposed to be the largest study in preventative health for women for cardiac disease. And with that, they had a cohort of women, and they were looking at how hormone replacement therapy was going to benefit or how it would impact cardiovascular disease. During that study, when they had women who were on estrogen and progestin, they realized that there was an increase in breast cancer. So from that, they did stop the study because they were like, we do see an increase in breast cancer, albeit if you look at the numbers, weren't enough that we should have gone the route that we did. But what the public heard through media was that estrogen and or hormone replacement therapy causes breast cancer. So if you can imagine from like a soundbite perspective, it literally was like everyone running around like a chicken with their head cut off being like, oh my God, we're all going to get breast cancer. So there wasn't really any time to look at how there were some cardioprotective benefits, and then, oh, by the way, it decreases risk of colon cancer. So, you know, there were all these different things that came out from the study, but the damage had been done, and this is where we are now, you know, 20 plus years later. And just looking at statistics, you know, if you want to put numbers to it, when we used to prescribe HRT or hormone replacement therapy, That was what we were doing at that time, right? And from that 2002 halt of that study, we've seen an 84% decline in the prescription of hormone replacement therapy. So it was kind of like the streets are empty, all the buildings are abandoned, and hormone replacement therapy is like this tumbleweed, just kind of like going down the street in a Western. And that's where we are now.
Now, can you unravel the connection between menopause and increased risk for conditions like heart disease, dementia, and osteoporosis?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up those specific conditions, which we do see impacting women later on in life in morbidity and mortality rates. And what we do know is that the depletion of estrogen is almost like this body's kind of vacuum. And when it leaves, the aging process and the inflammation process in the body significantly increase. And so that's why we start to see that if you do look at heart disease is still the number one killer of women across the world. And looking at the correlation between the decline in estrogen in women and average age of menopause is 52, then looking at heart disease and when it kills is because we don't have the benefit of having the protection of estrogen. And the same thing goes for bone, and the same thing goes for brain and dementia. I think we really hyper-focused on reproductive hormones, namely estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, as being like hormones that are only in the pelvis. And there are estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone receptors all over the body, in the brain, in the heart, in the breast, and like everywhere, in the bone. And so when you start to see this relationship kind of crumbling between hormones and the target organ, that's where you start to see the disconnect in why these diseases and conditions manifest so rapidly after menopause in women.
And what are the most stubborn myths about menopause that you confront related to hormone therapy and otherwise? And how do you confront them in your practice?
This is why I love medicine for what it is, the ability to use fundamental research, evidence-based research, and statistics to truly help patients understand where they lie individually within those statistics for me. So most things that I hear is that hormone replacement therapy is bad. That's literally the statement. And so, you know, my job is to extract out of that, well, in that statement that you heard, what did you hear and why? And when I can meet patients where they are in their understanding and information level of what they have, then that's when the conversation starts. And so that's why I take the time to help, you know, understand their discomfort with the information, miseducation on the information, and then we start to build. We start to build from that and scaffold for them.
So important. And so more granular, and ask you, based on the latest North American Menopause Society, the NAMS guidelines, what are some of the key considerations for using hormone therapy in perimenopausal, menopausal women?
Yeah, most of the key considerations when you look at the NAMS recommendation is really for symptom relief, right? I don't think we're at the stage yet when we're looking at HRT as something that is preventative and how you give it to a patient to prevent disease. Do I think we'll get there? Absolutely. But where we are right now is being more verbose and robust with saying it is okay to take hormone replacement therapy. Because remember, we're coming off of a 20-year desert of not giving it. So now we have to get everyone back on board to being like, it's safe. That's where we are. At a starting point of saying it's safe and you can take it. And we want to help your symptoms.
So how do factors like ethnicity and socioeconomic status play a role in a woman's menopause experience and maybe her access to care? Have we observed any patterns here?
Yeah, we definitely have. Now, the SWAN study was a pivotal study that really looked at women and their experience in menopause. And they were able to extract ethnicity based on Japanese, Chinese, Caucasian, Hispanic, and Black women. And what they were able to show is the severity and frequency, but also duration. And when they looked at factors starting with duration, they found that Black women tend to have a longer time at which they'll have their vasomotor symptoms, namely hot flashes and night sweats, whereas the least were Japanese. And also when they looked at severity, it was also seen that Black women had more severe hot flashes and night sweats and also started at an earlier age. Now, here's the caveat to all of that. is that's where the socioeconomic kind of plays a role in exactly those statistics that I just mentioned. When we look at aging and how it has an impact on the body internally through micro-stressors and chronic inflammation, over time that it starts to diminish the body's ability to have response systems or the immune system, social stressors, emotional stressors, which is what we see in lower socioeconomic communities, does play a part on the internal biologics of the body and how that shows inflammation. And therefore, you start to see some of those symptoms occur earlier. And I wish that we looked more at medicine in a way where we're bringing into it the actual experience and stressors of someone's life, dictating their possibility of having a disease, which we could see even outside of menopause. When you look at hypertension and diabetes and asthma, same thing is what you're seeing for those disease states as well.
And much more research is needed, right? So what hurdles do we face in menopause research today, and how can we overcome them?
I think most times when you look at studies, you really want significant power, right? So you want a study that has a lot of women, and that's where we need the buy-in, right? We need the subjects to be able to look at the differences between different types of hormone replacement therapy, because there's different modalities, there's different doses. There's different medical histories that might fall into why someone can or can't take anything. I'm going to make a very big shout out right now to testosterone, is that we need FDA to approve testosterone therapy for women because it currently isn't. That's a big part of hormone replacement therapy as well. But I think that in order for this to happen, we have to have the buy-in of people being safe. And that's why I was saying this is a slow shift into getting everyone to understand the benefits of it. Because the reason it was stopped, right, or the reason people believed that hormone replacement therapy wasn't good is because it put them in an unsafe category. And so people will never just jump all in if they feel unsafe. They want to be safe.
Yes, definitely. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about sexual health. So how does menopause impact our sex lives, and what are the options for addressing some of the changes that happen with menopause?
I discuss often because there is a belief that sexual health is not important for women. I think there's a belief that it can't be addressed or shouldn't be addressed or it's not important. And so I would say both to society to stop sharing that narrative, and also for providers to really truly ask these really hard questions about sexual health, because most people are not going to be very, you know, kind of forefront with saying, I'm having some issues with libido or I'm having vaginal dryness. And so we have to bring it to the table and say, you know what, how's your sex life and how is your interest in sex life? How many times are you having intercourse? Are you having pain with intercourse? Instead of just it being an intake form type of question, sex, yes or no, and then we move on, it needs to be a little bit more introspective than yes or no. And that's how I question my patients, and it's amazing how much information you can find out from them. I think there's a lot about sexual health that I would love to, you know, take a lot of time to discuss, but really it boils down to how do I feel about myself in this new transition? A lot of that starts to wane because of the decrease in estrogen and testosterone. But also, if I am having intercourse or sexual relations with themselves and or others, is it painful or uncomfortable? And what can I do to resolve that? I think those are two good places to start, is the thought process behind it, which is your libido and intimacy and wanting to connect. And then also when I am connecting, is there something that's hindering me from having the full pleasurable experience?
Okay, so I want you to get out your crystal ball for me. And what do you predict for the future of menopause management and research in the coming years?
What I predict is that we are going to have everyone on board. I believe that this is something that we'll look back in maybe 10 years and we'll start to see more of it in, I guess you could say, pop culture, in TV shows, where we're not seeing, you know, older women in Hollywood being shunned because they're older. We're seeing love stories where it can be very spicy because people can still have sex when they're old. And then from a provider standpoint, you know, this is something that I'm really invested in right now, you know, as I'm building a tech platform called Modern Menno, is that it's inclusive in the space of all providers to be able, whatever expertise that they're in, to actually address the issue and give their patients a really kind of full menu of options that they can take, whether it's HRT or not, whether it's nutritional lifestyle issues, looking into kind of the biomechanics of exercise and movement, because really it has to work together and to really get the big picture and the great outcome that we're looking for.
And Jessica, what proactive steps should women take as they approach menopause to really ensure a healthy transition?
As if I said, if this were a screenplay right now, menopause is like a horror story. This is where we'll make the biggest impact in the next years to come, is to change the screenplay to a comedic love story. One, we cannot escape menopause. So if anyone is listening and thinks that they may like evade it, in the sense of symptoms, but just menopause is like it, characteristically what it is, which is just decrease in estrogen, not eliciting a period, is that we can't escape it. So that's going to happen. But as we start to get to that phase is to say, you know what, I'm going to embrace this phase and I'm not going to look at it as something that's scary, but what are the things that I can start to do now that's going to make that transition easier, not as rocky? I really feel that women are on this like smooth road, maybe a pothole here or there. And then it's like they hit menopause and like no one has fixed that road. It's like all these potholes are like falling all over the place. And I don't want the transition to be so abrupt. I want it to be this kind of like moving into the fourth quarter with grace and the ability to accept it for what it is, but to do it in a way where they take this ownership of it and embracing that change.
And how can people who aren't going through menopause best support the people in their lives who are?
Have conversations that are a little bit more in depth, because it's never just a one-word answer when it comes to menopause. It usually is this confluence of answers which creates this experience for this woman. And many times we're not even able to express it either, because we really haven't given this freedom or luxury to women to be okay and open in how they express the menopausal experience. So when talking to men is having them understand that the conversation, sometimes the support alone is the biggest part of what can get women through, whether it's a hot flash or a night sweat, or, you know, really trying to work on their sexual intimacy, is just the support alone and being vocal with it as well. Then I would also say for society, I think we have to do better in how we look at women in aging in general. And also from that menopause perspective, I've seen this all throughout women's health, is anytime there's anything to do with the pelvis, it becomes very demeaning, as if it's not true. And so many other features that really allow women to be like, well, if this is the reaction and response I'm going to get from the outside world about this thing that I'm going through, then I'm not going to talk about it. Why would you? And so I think we need to change how society sees women, period. So I think there's a lot of work to be done. There really is. But again, I always say that I'm optimistic about the future.
So Jessica, where can people find you and find out more information about the work you're doing?
So Instagram, people can find me on Jessica Shepherd, MD, SHEPHERDMD. But also what I've done over the last year and a half is extract all my menopause info from my personal page and put it on Modern Menno. So Modern Menno is my channel that is just devoted to menopause information. And then I hope that people join us there and ask questions, but also really look at all the information that's on there, because it is actually very focused on the lifestyle portion of menopause.
Dr. Jessica Shepherd, thank you so much for this conversation. I always learn so much from you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me here. And I hope that we can have even more conversations about women's health and looking at how perimenopause and menopause are going to be the new transition that we can look forward to and take that gracefully.
And that's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening. TED Health is a part of the TED Audio Collective. I'd love to hear your thoughts about the episode. Send me a message on Instagram at ShoshanaMD. This episode was produced by me and Costanza Gallardo, edited by Alejandra Salazar, and fact-checked by Vanessa Garcia Woodworth. Special thanks to Maria Lagis, Faraday Grunge, David Biello, Daniela Valarezo, and Michelle Quint. I'm Dr. Shoshana Ungerleiter, and I'll talk to you again next week.
To get people excited about Boost Mobile's new nationwide 5G network, we're offering unlimited talk, text, and data for $25 a month.
Forever.
Even if you have a baby.
Even if your baby has a baby.
Even if you grow old and wrinkly and you start repeating yourself.
Even if you start repeating yourself.
Even if you're on your deathbed and you need to make one last call.
Or text.
Right, or text. The long-lost son you abandoned at birth.
You'll still get unlimited talk, text, and data for just $25 a month with Boost Mobile.
Forever!
After 30 gigabytes, customers may experience slower speeds. Customers will pay $25 a month as long as they remain active on the Boost Unlimited plan.
Forever.
If you wear glasses, you know how hard it is to find the perfect pair. But step into a Warby Parker store, and you'll see it doesn't have to be. Not only will you find a great selection of frames, you'll also meet helpful advisors and friendly optometrists. Yep, many Warby Parker locations also offer eye exams. So the next time you need glasses, sunglasses, contact lenses, or a new prescription, you know where to look. To find a Warby Parker store near you, or to book an eye exam, head over to warbyparker.com/retail.
This episode is brought to you by Mejuri. Mejuri does fine jewelry differently. They're all about buying for yourself, where you decide the occasion. Everything is handcrafted with quality, craftsmanship, and responsible sourcing in mind. So these are pieces you can feel good about in more ways than one. Plus, there are so many designs you can mix and match to create a stack for every look. Shop in-store, in-app, or online at Mejuri.com today.